Well, I haven't prepared a talk, but I've got some notes here, and I can use it as a basis to talk about the subject of the retreat, which is developing and understanding more deeply the whole area of mindfulness, which is really the Buddha's central teaching. So it's really a really big thing in Buddhism, is the development of just becoming aware, and through that awareness, using that awareness to become free of all kinds of conditionings. Conditionings that cause us to react unskillfully to our experience, and also conditionings which cause us to be ignorant and to not understand and to be making mistakes about the nature of the world we're in. So awareness is a simple thing that we all have. But it's, in Buddhism, it's the essential thing that's cultivated through the practices. On this retreat, we're going into what the Buddha called the four foundations of mindfulness, which are the body, the physical body, which is, you could say, the most fundamental part of our experience. We often ignore it, but it's fundamental. The feelings, which is the whole area of experience that is found to be pleasant or painful, which is also extremely basic, because so much of our emotionality is based on either wanting or not wanting. You know, wanting lots and lots of different kinds of gratification and pleasure and nice things that we like. You know, it's really basic. Everyone's doing this. And also things that we don't want. And you can want something a lot, or you can prefer something over something else, or you can rather not have it, or you can never ever want to see that thing again. You know, there's quite a lot of range to likes, dislikes, wants, and not wants. So you've got the area of the body, you've got the area of the feelings, and also you have the area of your mental states. You know, we get up in the morning and we're in a particular mental state. It could be a joyful mental state. You know, we could walk down the road full of joy and everything looks great, and you kind of assume everything's going to go really well. Maybe it's a sunny day. You know, often on a sunny day, people are in a good mood. But these moods, I mean, it's good to be in a good mood, but it's a bit like our... these moods change, and it's good to be aware that we are in this overall mood. There are also grumpy moods. There are also depressed moods. There are also angry, irritable moods where everything is irritating. There are a whole range of different moods. There are moods when the Buddha described moods where our awareness is, he called it the shrunken state, where everything is very sort of narrowed down and dull and difficult and kind of stuck. And you talk about moods of elation, where everything is flowing and everything is just happening, you know. And so much is dependent on these moods, so it's quite good to notice your internal weather. Notice when you shift from one mind state into another. Sometimes we flip between mind states really quickly, maybe several times in one day, or even more quickly than that. Just as often, the different mind states can stay around for days and sort of shift. But if you notice these things, it makes quite a lot of difference to your understanding of why things are happening to you. You know, if you realise, I was in such a bad mood when that was happening to me, and you understand your own reactions. Or if you understand, I was on a bit of a high, again, you understand yourself better. So mindfulness is all about that, really. It's all about understanding yourself in a lot of breadth and a lot of depth. So the body the state of the body, and various aspects of the body, which I'll go into in a minute, that's important. The feeling aspect of things, liking, disliking, and all the emotions that spring out of that, that's important. And then the overall mind state, which is composed of body and feelings as well, in a way, that all comes into it, but it's a kind of, it's like our personal weather. It's like our personal weather. Sometimes there's a storm, you know. Sometimes it's like sunny for days, etc. Sometimes it's freezing cold all the time, you know. So it's like that. So the Buddha talked in terms of those first three foundations, or patanas. And the fourth satipatthana, the fourth foundation, is more complex than that. Because it's looking at the specific objects of our mind. So at any particular moment, our attention is on something. It's always on one particular thing. It changes quite rapidly. And in meditation, we refine our ability to notice what's happening in our attention. You know, when you sit down to meditate, suddenly you realise how distracted you are, or suddenly you realise, oh, I can't stop thinking about what I'm going to do tomorrow, or I can't stop thinking about this. Or you find yourself in a dream, or you just notice your mind a bit more clearly in meditation. So that's just an illustration of the fact that our minds are always engaged with something. So this fourth foundation of mindfulness is becoming more tuned in to that aspect of our awareness. And that's just part of that, actually. The other part of it is applying the Dharma to our experience. So applying the teaching, for example, of developing kindness, developing concentrated states of mind, etc. So all the teachings that we hear about here in the centre, the idea is to apply that to our lives, right? So this fourth foundation of mindfulness involves the application of the practice to our experience. So we find ourselves perhaps in the elated mood, walking down the street on a sunny day, and then we suddenly realise we've left our keys at home and we can't get into our flat. And then the mood shifts and we start panicking, you know. So mindfulness, this is just an example, mindfulness would be noticing the shift of mood and maybe applying the Dharma and thinking, just relax, maybe there's another way. And not panicking or something like that. So applying the Dharma to the particular mind states, to the particular feelings, to the particular thing that's happening with our body. So in a way, that's the whole matrix, if you like, of different aspects of the Buddha's teaching of mindfulness. And you can see it just applies to the whole of our existence, just applies to everything in our experience. And the Buddha, in a way, is isolating four key areas experience. And some of it is quite general, like the mind states are quite general. Some of it is quite particular, like looking at particular thoughts or particular feelings or particular sensations. That's a bit of an overview, but there's more to the overview. Actually, because the practice of mindfulness is a complete path to awakening. It involves the whole of the path to awakening. So there is, there's a kind of a sequence to it. So if I say a few things about that, hopefully that'll become clearer. So there's a bit of a sequence to applying the teaching of mindfulness in our life. The Buddha said that the qualities of the practice are you've got to practice diligently. In other words, you've got to really want to become more aware in order for this to work. If this is going to get anywhere, you've got to be interested, preferably really keenly interested in developing it and bringing it about. There's a kind of aspect of diligence or virya. There's the aspect of clear knowing. So you try to develop a clear awareness of body, feeling, mind state, particular aspect, particular moments of attention. That's a lot to practice, a lot to learn, there's a lot to develop. So trying to do that, a clear knowing. Yes, I am sitting down, or yes, I am thinking about this, knowing it clearly. Because usually, it's like our mind states are usually not that clear, and they're just sort of slipping over each other, and they just happen, and we don't really know what's happening. Some of it depends how clear you are. But clarity is a good thing in this teaching. Clear knowing. And then another one is presence. Being present. We talk about being in the present moment. That's literally true. That's a practice we should literally try to bring about and be present in the present moment. And also, it's about being present in a way that's ideally free from attachment, free from craving, free from hanging on to it. So in the example of the elated state, walking down the road on the sunny day and just feeling fantastic, as it were, not hanging on to that state, because you can be on a bit of a cloud, you can be in a bit of a bubble in that sort of state and be a bit unaware, actually, of what's going on, because you just want to stay in this great mood. And when you're in this great mood and you're attached to it, you can override other feelings and other perceptions. You can crowd them out because you want to stay in a good mood. I don't want to know about that. I want to be in this good mood. So our mind states, which are only partially under our control, we need not to hold on to them, not to think that we can hold on to them. So free from desire, and also free from attachment to them, and also free from complaining too much about them. Free from sort of saying, I'm in this state, and it's so horrible, and I kind of need to moan about it quite a lot to people. And that's also a kind of attachment, is a kind of complaining about the mental state all the time. A discontented state of mind is also a kind of attachment to it. You sort of can't let, you hold on to it by just emphasizing its unpleasantness all the time to yourself as a way of holding on to it. So that's the spirit of the practice, in a way. You know, diligent, really wanting to be aware, trying to clearly be aware, being present in the present moment, but also letting it go, letting it move. It's moving all the time, and that's the nature of it. And in a way, that's the deep part of the practice, is knowing that it's impermanent, knowing that it's not anything of substance. It's like a cloud. It's shifting all the time. And really being convinced of that is very liberating. It's very liberating. And that liberation is, you could say, the crucial part about awakening in the Buddhist tradition. So So I'm just telling you loads of things about the practice of mindfulness as an introduction to this really comprehensive practice. The Buddha says, and I think my points will start to link up with each other the more I talk about it. The Buddha also says we should apply our mindfulness internally and externally. In other words, we look at things in ourselves, we also look at them in other people. We notice that other people also have feelings. Notice that other people are also have bodies. You know, notice and that must affect them. People are affected by their physical state. People are affected by being cold and hot. And again, this is basic, but very often we don't empathise enough with other people. So remembering these things about other beings, you know, that they have a body experience, they have a feeling experience, they are in a mood. It's basic, and everyone knows it since they were a child. But remembering it really helps our understanding of what we are and the kind of world that we're actually in. We forget those things. So that's a part of the teaching. So knowing it inside yourself, knowing it outside yourself, and knowing their nature of arising and passing away, which I mentioned earlier on, that's also part of it. And also not making it too complicated. Knowing it to the extent necessary. So you can't be, you know, I'm talking about a lot of detail here. You can't hold all that together and so you're not trying to be aware of everything simultaneously and just holding it all the time. That would lead to perhaps you blowing a fuse in some way or other. Just be aware of what you're aware of at the time, you know. Be mindful of body, feeling, mind state, and mental object to the extent that's necessary for practice. It's in a way, it's also simple. So in a way, I suppose that's the overview of mindfulness. There is more to it. But to understand them more, we need to go into each of the four satipatthanas, each of the four foundations. And tonight, the main thing is the body. Tonight and tomorrow, Yeshe Bodhi is also going to say something about and lead us through some practices tomorrow, which have to do with mindfulness of the body. The Buddha talked about mindfulness of the body in lots of different ways. It's very interesting. This is from memory, I haven't got it written down, but he talks about the physical body in terms of what you're doing. So remembering that you're sitting down, remembering that you're going out to the shops, remembering that you're walking, noticing what you're doing with your body, and even little things like your body language and the way that you carry yourself, all sorts of things like that, just knowing about the body. If you do yoga and body-based practices, you become more aware of these things. You become more aware of what you're expressing in your body. So body awareness can really almost sometimes be like a mirror showing you something about yourself, showing yourself about your mood, for example. You realise, you know, if you're sort of, you look at yourself and you're sort of sitting in a particular way and you've got a particular body position, maybe you're very tense or maybe you're sort of hunched up and in a funny sort of way. It tells you something about your inner state. The Buddha also spoke in terms of the elements. So a way to look at the experience of body, and maybe I shouldn't use this language of looking at the experience of the body, why just experiencing your body directly, he talks about the six elements, so the element of earth. Everything in our physical experience that's hard, like it's bony, you know, it's bony, and the sort of skin is, it's resistant, you know, your finger just goes straight through it, as it were. It sort of resists you, it's relatively hard. This is the earth element. But also, as we all know, the body is completely soaked in liquid. It's all liquid inside, and you know, you can feel it in your eyes, you can feel it in your tongue and your mouth, and you know that throughout the whole body there's loads of different kinds of liquids carrying different chemicals, moving things around. We don't think about this very much, and we don't want to think about this very much very often, but it's quite a... The nature of the body is very, very amazing. It's an amazing thing. So the water element can sort of introduce us to that, the wet aspect of the body, you know. Then there's the fire element. There's the heat and cold aspect of the body. When we feel hot or we feel cold, or one part of our body is cold, our feet are cold, or our tip of our nose is cold, that's the fire element. Or we're just too hot and we've got too much on, or this room's too hot, and my body is too hot. This is the fire element. It's just another aspect of physical embodiment, but, and it's basic, all this stuff is basic, but knowing it, as you become more sensitive to your experience, you notice these things more and more. So the fire element, the air element, is clearly the breath, the breathing. It's clearly all the different airs in the body, the different movements of different kinds of air in the body, wind in the body. But it's also movement itself. It's called the wind element, but it also means that which moves in the body. It's not just something physical that makes up the body, it's the dynamic quality of the body. So we talk about, in yoga, for example, we talk about prana, or in qigong, they talk about qi. It's like that subtle movement within the body that moves our energy. This is also the wind element in the body. And in Buddhist tradition, there's lots of ways of talking about the movement of the wind element, the vayu or the prana. So that's another way of talking about the body. And I think maybe we'll come back to some other ways of talking about the body, but I don't want to go on and on, just give you loads of information about this. But it really is about a very direct experience. Sometimes people don't actually know the difference between talking about something and experiencing it. And you can say, do you see the pattern on the carpet? You know, do you see the pattern on the carpet? And they say, yeah, I see the pattern on the carpet. I see the pattern on the carpet. But to what extent are they really actually experiencing it through their eyes? Or we can say, yeah, I know I'm sitting in a chair. It's obvious, you don't have to tell me I'm sitting in a chair. But are we really actually aware of it? I mean, I don't mean, there's a difference between knowing it, in, as it were, in theory, and actually experiencing sitting in a chair right now which is different to a sitting in a chair half a second ago. It's a different experience. There's something else going on. There are different sensations which are telling you you're sitting here. There are slight changes in bodily posture, and also the fact that one has been sitting for a while changes the whole experience. And I've just pointed to the fact that experience is something immediate. It doesn't happen in the abstract. And so much of our lives, because we're adults who know how to walk and talk, and we know how to open a door with a door handle, unlike very young children, we tend not to experience our world very vividly because we kind of know how to do it. So mindfulness of the body is also about kind of reimagining the world, coming back to a more primal awareness of our actual experience of our bodily contact with things. I feel that that'll do as a bit of an introduction, because there's loads more just in this one department of the practice. There's loads more. And maybe we'll have a chance to talk about some of those things as well. But actually, I don't want to just talk. I want to know whether this relates to anything in your experience. Maybe keep the recording, because what people come up with might be interesting. So I'm going to stop rummaging on, and I want to hear what you've got to say. Do you have an experience of the body in any way, do you think? Do you understand what its value is for the practice of mindfulness? And what do you think about the value of mindfulness for spiritual life? I want to know.
I think it's really essential. And I've been trying more recently to remember to. That's it. If I can remember to throughout the day, or any part of the day, then I'm already, that's it.
Yes.
But actually, I'm very resistant, even though I'm aware, logically, that if I'm sort of getting more anxious and walking really fast and sort of not really sort of in the body or out of my thoughts, it's very hard for me to come back, even though I absolutely know, just logically, focus on the breath, or return to the body.
It's very difficult to remember the value of it, and remember actually that it's a possibility right now. I think. I don't know quite what it is we forget, but we do forget. Something about the motivation, isn't it? And sometimes we don't forget.
We forget the body.
Yeah, I think we do.
Yeah, I have experienced that this week. I remind myself often to go to the body, because it's my preferred mode of meditation, to stay in the body, the body sensations. And it's shocking to realize how far away I've been from the awareness of the body, yes.
It is a really important component in our meditation practice, isn't it? A lot of our practice is body-based. Mindfulness of breathing is body-based.
It's interesting, because I've done a lot of physical exercise as well.
Oh, you go to the gym, don't you?
Running.
Yeah.
And you can be running, which is very physical, very body-based, and be in your mind.
Being
in your body, as it were.
This thing of jogging with iTunes or something going on in your earphones. I think, I'm sure you could do that mindfully, but I imagine people often don't, and they're just in the song, you know, when they're running along. I don't know. I don't do that. So I don't want to make assumptions. Have you got any thoughts, Dr. Bertie?
Yeah, well, I've got some thoughts, but I don't know. There, no, I was just thinking when you were talking about the air element, the talking itself is air element.
Yes, yeah.
I find that always quite interesting.
So yes, it is, yeah.
It's also the air element, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's my
thought. It's almost like the interface between the mind and the body, that, isn't it? You know, I'm not thinking about what I'm saying, it's just coming out of my mouth. And there's a sort of a... Mm. It's the same for everybody when they speak. They don't kind of craft the words in their heads. I mean, sometimes we do think a bit about it, but usually it just comes out. Where does it come from? It's very mysterious. But it is related to our motivation and our thinking, isn't it? Say something and you think, how does that happen?
Thinking is an air element.
Yeah.
In the tarot.
Oh, is it? Is
yes,
it? Oh.
Yes. The sword represents thinking, and thinking is an air element.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a similar correlation in Buddhism, because Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom, carries a very sharp sword, which represents speech, actually, and it represents wisdom as well. Mm. It represents speech. Because people think it's a violent image. It's really about making a distinction. You draw a line, or you cut. You make a distinction, do something specific. It's all about specificity.
Yes, so that clarity and clearly knowing is a
clear knowing,
aspect of mindfulness.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how it also relates to ethical practice.
Yes.
Especially, you know, you can relate it to speech, but you've got all these other acts of body.
Yes.
It could be skillful and unskillful. So, in that sense, you were asking how important is mindfulness for the spiritual life?
Yes. Or,
in terms of your ethical practice.
Yes.
You know, need a lot of mindfulness of body for ethical practice.
Can you give us a little example of acts of body?
If you're not aware of what your body is doing, then it's, you know, it's quite easy to be unskillful, isn't it? You kind of, I don't know. Well, there's loads of things you can imagine. You could stab someone if you're not
aware. So violent actions.
Yeah.
Are actions of body.
Yeah.
Or gestures.
Gestures.
You can do quite a lot of damage just by your gestures, just the way you, just your body language.
Yeah.
You can make someone afraid by the way you're, by the way you are, you know, or you can,
There's so much in this topic.
Yeah, it is.
Well, it covers everything. It's casual.
Really deep, because it's often we find you sometimes your emotions will completely take over your body, and then you're not body because you're focusing.
You can be completely charged with passion or with anger, and you can feel poisoned by anger.
Yeah, and it takes over.
So strong.
But it's interesting that takes the mindfulness away.
Yeah.
That sort of the body, the strong emotions take the mindfulness completely away.
Yeah.
I think that's when. It's probably not very sensible to drive when you're angry, because you know you're much more likely to make mistakes, because the whole body eye coordination is much less sort of reliable, as it were.
It almost feels as if so on the one hand, when you're being aware and mindful, then you've got the other scale is your my tendency for default actions. So my habits.
Yeah.
So for example, It would be extraordinarily lucky if I was habitually ethical and habitually this. So, in theory, I don't have to worry about mindfulness so much. But actually, what's actually happening is when I am mindful, then all these other things, then I will not slip into my default tendencies.
Yes.
And then I'll become much more, you know, the person that I'd hope to be. But any time that I'm not kind of aware of my body or my thoughts and emotions, then I actually fall into whatever it is. You know, it's as if it's my default of choice.
Yeah.
Everyone has a default of choice, whatever it is. And my behaviours would become like that. So I do notice that a lot.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much what Sangharakshita describes as the reactive mind and the creative mind. You've got your left hand, the mind you've got in your left hand over there, is the more the reactive mind, the default setting mind, the thing that you would do if there wasn't any awareness. And you've got this more creative, mindful mind, which is much more flexible and able to respond with awareness. Yeah.
And it's interesting with the science that's come out, and they call that neuroplasticity. Oh. And exactly, I mean, the science is actually catching up with Buddhism, basically.
You know,
we're like thousands of years ahead, in theory.
Well, but the individual people aren't thousands.
So they talk about the grooves.
Yes.
That have been perpetuated. So my habitual behavioural patterns have very deep grooves from, you know, from childhood or whatever.
Yes.
And but actually, how through being mindful, you can actually change those grooves. Like the Grand Canyon is now kind of like a sort of a little valley now, and then it becomes, you know, then you don't even have those grooves anymore eventually.
Right.
So that's the idea of how it completely can change through constant meditation, mindfulness practices.
Fantastic. Okay, I've heard what you said, and I think you all understand completely what you're saying. I would like to go downstairs and do a bit of practice.